Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Hamlee. All next week, WHRV-FM, along with other NPR member stations, is participating in a national week of conversation called A Nation Engaged. We're asking these questions. What does it mean to you to be an American? And what could the next president do to advance your vision? We have a stellar group of panelists with their answers, and we want to hear from you, too. Plus, the latest on Hurricane Matthew from News 3 meteorologist Dominis Brown. It's all coming up next on Another View, right after this news from NPR.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Hamlee. A heartfelt thank you to everyone who came out last Saturday for our Race Let's Talk About It town hall at Virginia Wesleyan College. Close to 200 of you came out to talk about living together in a culture of fear. We heard lots of perspectives, and at least according to the feedback I've received, you believe it was well worth the 90 minutes of your time. If you missed it, don't worry. We're already working on our next town hall, which will be held in February of 2017. In the meantime, please visit whro.org/talkaboutraceoften for updated articles, information, and perspective, and as we continue to explore ways to bring the races together. Since August, NPR member stations, including WHRV, have been holding national conversations on three critical issues: America's place in the world, America's economy, and beginning on Monday, what it means to be an American. Today, Another View kicks off the conversation by exploring what it means to be an American from an African-American perspective and how the next president can advance the vision. This is a conversation for everyone, so give us a call with your answer to the questions at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Those numbers again are 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We've put together a panel of folks from different professional, political, socioeconomic, and age groups. Please welcome back to Another View, Ms. Delcina Miles, President and CEO of the Miles Agency, which is a niche marketing company. Hello, Delcina.
Hello.
How are you? Glad to have you back.
Good. Where's the applause track? Come on.
Political science and history professor at Hampton University, Dr. Eric Clavel. Eric, how are you?
Great. Thank you, Barbara.
Good. So happy to have you on, as always.
Thank you so much.
And Eric, by the way, is the creator of the Clavel Report, which won a National Association of Black Journalists Excel Award along with us. So thank you for that and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Thank you.
Nicholas Thomas is a strategic communications major at Hampton University and also an intern here at Another View. How are you, Nicholas?
I'm good. It's great to be here.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. And joining us by phone is Ms. Rose Arrington. She's a commissioner with Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority and a resident of the Digstown community. How are you, Rose?
I'm fine.
Good. I'm glad that you're joining us on the air. So, Rose, I'm going to start with you. So from your perspective, what does it mean to you to be an American?
To be an American was what I was raised to be. My parents and my grandparents told us that we had no choice. We're born here, so we have to abide by the rules and look at what America means to you. It's a chance to overcome and to raise ourselves up and be somebody.
Okay. Okay. Now, Rose, you are a baby boomer, and Delcino, you fall into that category also. So yes. What is your answer to the question, what does it mean to be an American?
It means taking advantage of the opportunities that are out there. So I'm a business owner, so I have opportunities to create jobs and to leave a legacy of having something that I can have for my kids and my nieces and nephews. Because there was a time that we owned a lot of things, and we passed that on. There's not a lot of that anymore. You know, I was saddened to hear, and I know it's a business decision, that Johnson Publications is no longer family-owned or black-owned. So we're losing some of that. And so that's what drives me. Being an American is being able to start a business, create jobs, and provide for my family, and provide something, a legacy for those that follow me, not only in my family, but the next generation, like Nicholas. He's in the profession where I'm in a position now, I could hire him, as an example. Mm-hmm. And so you and I have had that sidebar, and we can talk about it later, about those black-owned businesses having their own job fair to hire others. I know you can't discriminate, but to showcase and feature the potential and the resources that we have right here in our own community. There are several black-owned businesses here. We just need to talk to one another and create those jobs for our young people.
Okay. Now, Eric, you are a Gen Xer.
I am.
So from your perspective, what does it mean to be an American?
From my perspective, what it means to be an American, it means the opportunity to serve. Living in this time period that we live in man's history, and I'm speaking of the creation of man to the Egyptians, to the Greeks, the Romans, and on, so forth and so on. We live in a country now where there are no limits on us. No limits whatsoever. We're given these opportunities for freedom of speech, freedom of to assemble, freedom of religion, the opportunity to receive a free education and the like. These are opportunities to take what we have and utilize it to serve others that do not have. As the caller stated before, the first panelist,
Rose
said, "Hey, Rose, we had no option but to be born here. But I believe that we were placed here, and I believe I have a purpose by being here to utilize everything that I've been given by God to help to educate, help to encourage, help to empower, help to uplift, help to make the world a better place for the next generation and the generation and a generation and a generation after that."
Okay. Now, Nicholas, you are a millennial, mm-hmm. And so you're the youngest one on the panel that we have. So from your perspective, what does it mean to be an American?
Go out and vote, millennial.
Oh, definitely.
We'll talk about that later.
And I encourage everybody to vote out there. But for me, the answer is twofold, you know. First, we got to look at the accomplishments of America. You know, we have NASA, we have the first black president, we have flying, we have telephones, all these great things that America has done, the internet, I can go on and on. But I think it's also important that we recognize what we still need to fix. There's so many issues going on. I look at so many different news stories, so many different things going on in the world. I feel like Americans, we lack transparency. We don't want to talk about the issues. You know, we try, like, there's a whole side of people that don't want to talk about what's going on, really going on in the country.
Okay. So we also got some sound from other people, and I want to play a little bit of that, and we can react to that on the other side. Let's start with the millennials. First, last week we had Clint Smith on, who is a phenomenal professor and TED Talk phenom, and he gave us lots of things to think about, and he also talked to us about what it means to be an American.
I think what it means to be an American in our sort of popular collective social discourse is different than what we sort of need to reconceptualize as what it means to be an American. I think oftentimes we position ourselves and are propagating this notion of American exceptionalism. But it's also important that we don't let this notion of exceptionalism suggest that we are not a deeply flawed country and that we do not have a deeply flawed history. We have to both hold the things that make us great and the things that make us flawed at the same time. And an example I always think of is Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson is the intellectual founding father of this country, responsible for the conception of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. He was also deeply racist. And that's interesting because I never learned about that Jefferson when I was in school. I never learned about the Jefferson who didn't believe that black people were fully human. I only learned about the Jefferson who was a sort of like intellectual icon and a paragon of freedom. But what has to happen is that we both have to recognize that Jefferson was a brilliant man and that he's also deeply racist. And if we can't hold both of those things at once and recognize that both of those things are parts of our collective social history, then we end up living in a sort of current social moment in which we fail to recognize the complexities of our current moment as well. And so I think to be an American means to be honest, and it means to interrogate that which makes us great and also that which makes us not so great.
Nick, that was almost the exact same thing. I mean, you guys were on the same page mm-hmm. in terms of that.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Thomas Jefferson, he owned over 600 slaves during his life, according to my research. You look at George Washington, he owned over 300 slaves. You look at Christopher Columbus, you know, he's given his day like Martin Luther King, but, you know, we don't look at all the bad things he did. You know, I feel like, you know, we like to look at one side of a person. We don't want to look at the negative. Well, I feel like you need to look at people in their totality to get a good, you know, description of who they are.
Mm-hmm. We also talked with Monique Tosin and Andre Jones. They're also millennials. Let's hear what they had to say.
For me personally, I would say it means opportunity. It's definitely freedom in relations to other countries. And if you have opportunities, you need to take advantage of those opportunities. And then you can actually see the outcome and get that American dream, as everybody says, and really see the potential that you have as an American.
Do you see any roadblocks as an African American?
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's definitely harder, but I like to take it as a challenge, I guess, to make myself stronger and not pay attention to, oh my God, people are looking at me different, are gonna treat me different, because challenging obstacles just make you a stronger person.
To be an American as an African American, as a black male, it's extremely tough. I'm constantly trying to not fit the mold of what other people want me to be. And sometimes that I feel like that holds me back from being myself. But sometimes I want other races or other people of different ethnicities and different beliefs to just see where I'm coming from without having their connotations of stereotypical black males. So I feel like I'm always trying to alter myself towards the perspective of what the white Americans would see as acceptable. It's very tough trying to find balance within those margins.
440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We're beginning a national conversation on what it means to be an American. Give us a call and let us know your thoughts. 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. So we've heard the millennials from a lot, from a bunch of different perspectives, but I want to play the silent generation. We have two gentlemen. One is 73. His name is William McGrady, and the other is 74, and he is the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
It's a very diverse type of a feeling compared to the average person, a non-African American. We have less of everything economically, educationally, job opportunities. Racism is as prevailed today as much as it has ever been. But knowing my past history is what I've been more interested in most of my life, understanding where I came from. I would say deceptive. Until we hear from our own authors, our own historians, you will never know the true tale of just what is going on in this world and how we led and developed our society.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson. We are the foundation of our democracy. African Americans are here 157 years before the signing of the Declaration of Independence. So we're the foundation of the society, not the bottom. And as we move, the whole society moves. In 1965, when African Americans received the right to vote for the first time in 85 years, likewise, white women couldn't serve on juries in 1967. 18-year-olds, those serving in Vietnam, could not vote. You couldn't vote on college campuses. You couldn't vote bilingually. You couldn't vote proportionally until 1988. And so as the foundation shook, the democracy came into being. We're the most democratic as a nation we've ever been. But the politics are democratic, but our economics are not. And that's the unfinished business of our struggle.
You know, I find it interesting that the silent generation and the millennials seem to be a little not as optimistic as you baby boomers and Gen Xers are. What do you think about that, Dulcina?
Well, I'm not pessimistic because I'm living that so-called American dream because I'm as a business owner, because I think that I'm coming from that perspective. Mm-hmm. I understand that the silent generation, they've seen things that we have not, and they've lived some of those things. I was too young to be marching, but I certainly appreciate those sacrifices because that's why I have the success I have today, is because of those sacrifices of my four parents. Mm-hmm. So I understand why. And then the millennials, actually, they're the beneficiary of some of those sacrifices too. but they're kind of at that point where they haven't stepped out and really been exposed to some of the things that some of the silent generation has been, or our generation has been exposed to, whether that's being called the N-word or being denied access to something that you should have a right to. If anything, there's on the other end with the public safety issue with the Black Lives Matter. I think they're seeing a lot of that. For the first time, they're seeing that perhaps they are being treated differently, that they are looked at differently because of the color of their skin. It has nothing to do with anything else. Here we have college-educated men that I'm sitting with, but in the eyes of some people, they're just black men, mm-hmm. Without any sort of thought as to perhaps they don't fit that mold of that dangerous criminal. Even though we know that they're dangerous criminals in every hue, and so what? And I have sons, I have nephews, and I have cousins and other family members who would walk down the street and be suffering the same sort of discrimination. So it sounds like that they're not as optimistic, but I think they're being realistic. So they're not that rose colored like, oh, I'm black, I have a college degree, then I'm the man. That's not the case. It's still America.
Eric, before I come to you, Rose, let me ask you the question. Yeah. So do you think that it makes a difference in terms of being an American where you fall socioeconomically? In other words, yeah. if you're having to struggle on a day-to-day basis, does that make a difference in your perception of what it means to be an American?
Yes, it does, because to me, the African American struggles every day. Sure, there are Afro-Americans that have reached the top, gotten their own businesses and everything. But to be honest, and being that I'm on in the residential society where I see the struggles, you may call us, they're not homeless, but they're poor. Mm-hmm. But they want, some of them want to reach out and be better. But there are so many struggles that when they finally, say they get into a good business, they can reach out and move forward. But there is a lot of prejudice there that keeps them at that position, that they can't reach no further. I've seen where some have rose above public housing, gotten them a house to own, but it's not the same. It's not when you get that house, when something breaks down, that's money out of you got to pay. Mm-hmm. And they don't have that kind of money. They don't have that kind. The car breaks down.
So
they don't have that money to keep it going.
So when you talk to folks that live in your neighborhood and so forth, do they feel a part of America? I mean, do they feel like they still belong even though they're struggling?
They feel that they are just an American by birth, not by really reaching the potentials they can really reach. Some of them have college education and are working at 7-Eleven at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And they feel like, well, what was the use of me even? You know, but if you don't, I think it comes from a lot from who really is there to encourage you, to tell you that, okay, you might not have reached that potential, but there's another door somewhere. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have that, they get stuck.
So the opportunity is there, but if they don't have someone to encourage them to take the opportunity and to mentor mm-hmm. them, then that's a problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Eric, what your thoughts on how the difference between the generations in terms of how being an American is perceived? And the phones are lit up, so we're
sure.
going to take some calls in a minute.
Well, actually, being a Gen Xer, I'm in the middle of the millennial generation and the generation before. So I'm kind of like that bridge between the two. the millennials, they see and they've grown up in a time period of what you call instant gratification. In addition to that, they've also seen the results of the fights of the generation before us for equal rights for individuals, or what was called integration. However, they're also experiencing the fallacy of integration in society as well, both economically, both equal treatment based on skin color, your demographics, your location, and the like. With that being the case, you know, it's in being able to look at both ends, you know, not being too far distant from both ends, you know, you still need what the millennials have, that ability to face things that should change without any notion or any reservation for, hey, I'm going to lose my job if I do this. You know, you should still have that type of attitude. Mm-hmm. All right. However, you should also be deliberate in what you do. There is power in being deliberate. In other words, instead of planning for the next hour, the next day, plan for the next generation, the next 100 years. So if I'm going to create change in this area, what does change look like? Not today, but what does change look like in 2100? Okay. So therefore, that mindset of thinking generationally also, I think, is missing from the millennial generation. But at the same time, because this generation before me has gone through so much, the baby boomers, they're saying, you know, well, you know, just hold on, things are going to happen, change takes time. And that's true. Meaningful change takes time. So it's really a balancing act between the two.
For you Gen Xers, let's go to the phones. Nick joins us from Newport News. Hi, Nick, you're on the air. What does it mean to you to be an American?
Yeah, I'm just loving everything that everybody's saying. I'm listening here. To me, I'm older. I'm 67. I was born in the northeast around Pittsburgh. I'm already retired. I have seen a lot of things come and go. And my vision of America is that it is still, we have not attained it yet. It's something we're all working towards. Whether you're young or old, or no matter what you've experienced or what your skin color is, America is an ideal that everybody needs to be reaching for. It should be the best in everybody. In other words, whatever your best vision of America is, mm-hmm. then go for it. It's and mine is, we're not, like I said, we're not there today. We got so many problems. I watched that show the other night on TV, America Divided. And,
okay. So we still have some work to do in order to come together.
It made me ashamed to be an American, to be honest with you. It made me ashamed to be a white person. It made me ashamed that government people would lie to us.
Okay, Nick, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate your feedback on that. Nick was pretty emotional about what is going on in our country today.
Yes.
Let's go to Kathy in Virginia Beach. Hi, Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi. I was actually very struck by the comment about trying to find your identity and what is considered too black to a white community, because I think millennials as a whole have that problem as what's the right form of Muslim to be, what will be accepted as LGBT. And I hear this from students constantly. My children are teenagers, and I think they're struggling with it. Our heritage is mixed as well. So how do you identify what are you, who are you, and who gets to tell you who you are? I think it's become a very pressing question to lots of people right now.
That's a fantastic point. Let's let our panelists respond to that. Let's start with you, Nicholas, since she's talking about millennials.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying what it is to be like our identity.
Yeah, how do you decide what your identity is, and who gets to tell you what your identity is?
Well, I mean, I think you decide your own identity. I think you need to look at the past, the past is for, you know, evaluating. We're supposed to evaluate what we've done in the past to go about what we're going to do for the future, learn from other people's mistakes. As a millennial, like, when I ask questions sometimes, people are like, well, it's just because that's how it is. It's like, why is, like, for example, the national anthem. For example. When I ask, why don't we sing the last, you know, verse, you know, because it includes no refuge can save the hurling and slave from the terror of flight to the groom of the glaive. And in the next line is like a land of the free and home of the brave. That like contradicts to me. We're talking about slaves, but we're talking about the land of the free. So it's like, to me, like I said at the beginning, I think we lack transparency. I think we need to open up the issues and talk about them so, you know, we can have a better understanding of who we are.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're starting the nationwide conversation on what it means to be an American with Delcino Miles, owner of the Miles Agency, Dr. Eric LaVille, political science and history professor at Hampton University, Nicholas Thomas, a senior strategic communications major at Hampton University, and Ms. Rose Arrington, a commissioner with Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority. Let's take a moment to get the latest update on Hurricane Matthew with News 3 meteorologist Dominic Brown. Dominic, welcome to Another View. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. So what's the latest with the storm?
Well, this storm is such a big storm right now. It's mainly east of Florida off the coast there. It's lashing portions of the Atlantic side of Florida right now. It has sustained winds at 120 miles an hour, gusts to around 150, and it's moving to the north-northwest at 12 miles an hour. So it's a major storm. Again, a lot of rainfall, a lot of wind, hurricane-force winds over portions of Florida right now. And at this point, it has not made landfall in the U.S. It's gotten very, very close, and so we'll have to continue watching the system as it moves to the north-northwest.
Wow, so with all that, and it still hasn't made landfall yet. That's absolutely incredible. So So what should we expect here in Hampton Roads this weekend?
So we can't let our guard down, but the good news about it is that the forecast track from the system and the center of the storm should stay well south of Hampton Roads and also south of northeastern North Carolina. However, the worst part of the area, at least for Carolina, is under a tropical storm warning, so we're going to be watching out for that. But Hampton Roads is not under any advisories right now when it comes to tropical advisories. We can expect some rain and bands. We can expect some wind as well. So as we go through the weekend, things will get kind of progressively worse with the rain. So we'll start seeing it trickle in and get heavy at times Saturday evening, Saturday night into early Sunday morning. We could see rain up to around maybe 4 to 6 inches for Southside Hampton Roads. We could see around 2 to 4 inches for the peninsulas as we head through the weekend. And also with that rainfall, we're likely looking at some flooding. So there's a flash flood watch in effect for Southside Hampton Roads Saturday morning through at least Sunday evening. So we're going to be watching out for some of that localized flooding in and around the area. The other thing about the winds, though, this storm is still a large system. It will downgrade to at least a Category 2 hurricane or Category 1 as it makes that bend and turn there towards South Carolina and North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Still a large storm, and so we'll feel some of the tropical storm force winds as it makes that turn. The winds will be picking up through the day on Saturday and on Sunday from the east-northeast around 25 and 35 miles an hour, gusts around 45 or even higher, and that will likely stick around through at least the early part, maybe even the first half of the day on Sunday. So that's going to cause some concerns because with the wind gusts like that, there still could be some isolated power outages, maybe some down tree limbs, down trees that we're going to have to watch out for because our ground is already saturated.
So it's basically going to be a nasty weekend.
It's going to be kind of progressively worse. You know, if you have things to do on Saturday morning, you'll be okay, but still it's going to be cloudy. We'll have some isolated rainfall out there, but those rain will progressively get heavier as we go through the evening and nighttime hours into Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. Dominic Brown from News 3, we thank you so much for joining us. And stay safe out there.
Anytime, stay safe, and we'll definitely be here throughout the weekend.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For joining us. And we're talking, wanted to take that quick weather break just so that we could stay on top of what's going on with Hurricane Matthew causing a lot of destruction further south. So we pray for those folks there. So we're talking about what it means to be an American. This is a part of a nationwide conversation that NPR will start this coming Monday, and we're kicking it off here on Another View today. I want to play for you two Gen X veterans and get their perspective on what it means to be an American. That is veteran Fred McKinnon and William Breckinridge. Fred McKinnon and William Breckinridge.
To serve in the military because it's the country I live in. I love my country, even though there's things that make me question it, you know, when you watch the news. But I realize that the majority of Americans don't think like that, small hate groups and stuff like that. The majority of people don't think like that. So that's what I think about being American.
For me, what I try to do as an American is just live by the values that our forefathers did, you know, like Martin Luther King. They went through so much to get to a point where now we have an African-American president. Now we have, you know, myself being an African-American officer. Did I have to deal with struggles along the way? Of course, as an African-American, I had to work twice as hard. I had to, you know, struggle twice as hard. But too much is given, too much is expected. I have the war wounds to show the glory that I have, but I have the wounds to show that, you know, the struggle that I went to get to where I am. You go out there and you take risk. You know, you take challenges, you face obstacles, because as you overcome obstacles, you're just gaining more knowledge for the next level. But America allows you to do that. If you don't like your situation in America, being an American, I can change it.
The system here in America is not designed to work for the black man. That's a gimme. So you have to do whatever you have to do. And I tell my kids all the time, don't ever say somebody's holding you back.
Okay, that was Fred McKinnon and William Breckenridge. And it's interesting that the Gen Xer is still saying you have to be twice as good.
Yeah.
And Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, we're out there. You know, we're at that point in our lives and careers where we're making strides, both in education, in law, in medicine, entrepreneurship, in government. And we see that the fallacy integration is real. Okay. And the caller prior to that stated that, you know, who gets to define who we are? And I think it's very important in looking at legal history and history itself, you have to understand the beginning of anything in order to understand where you are and how to get to a better future. If you look at the Constitution itself, the Constitution, more specifically, the preamble does not give any rights. It does not give any federal powers, state powers, nor does it limit. What it does, it shapes and it gives the idea of what the Constitution is all about. And in the very beginning of the law of this country, the foundation says that we, the people of the United States, to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain this Constitution for the United States of America. Within those seven articles of the Constitution, the only we that have power are educated white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males. Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who made the decisions.
Those are the ones that made the decisions. Those are the ones that created public policy for the first 250 years of African Americans' existence here as property and slaves in this country. Those are the ones that limited Native Americans and really murdered them, destroyed them in order to take their lands under manifest destiny. Those are the ones that limited women's rights. Those are the ones that limited all immigrants' rights coming into this country on their own. Okay. So therefore, if you want to look at the source of why we have issues today, you have to look at the source of the law, the creation of why this country was here. Now, and some may say, well, we have the Bill of Rights. You have to understand there was a 2-year gap in the signing and ratification of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was never meant to be a part of the Constitution itself. So the Bill of Rights was not signed until 1791. The original heartbeat or the DNA of this country was in the first seven articles.
Okay, let's go to Donald in Virginia Beach. Hi, Donald. You're on the air.
Hello, how you doing? I had to take a break, and I love the conversation. Having grown up in the 60s in the South in Mississippi, I seen it's a shame in 2016 we're going through the same thing again, even though we got a history-making president. But yet our country has reverted back to profiling and using the N-word as a status symbol, which I still do not agree. And I applaud your panelists for their comments. And I'm just sorry, I served the country for 20 years, and I still profile in the military. So if we haven't stopped, and we need to keep fighting. Like President Obama said, don't boo, vote. Let's get them out there to vote for representing this country back to the greatness it should be.
Thank you so much, Donald. We appreciate your call. So let's go on to the second question, which is, what can the next president do to advance each vision that you all have brought up? So, Delcina, let me start with you.
Uphold the law of the land. Real simple. Don't create more barriers. Sometimes the government is our worst enemy because they create these laws that have perhaps unintentional setbacks, particularly in the business world. Like there's more regulation and things like that. give us the level playing field and just get out of the way. Let us do our thing. So that's coming from a person from a business perspective. Now, as far as helping us as African Americans, I was just looking at the website with the Minority Business Development Agency, which is an agency under the Department of Commerce. So, and they've had some successes. They've moved the needle over almost $4 billion in contracts to minority firms under the Obama administration the last 3 years. So there's hope there. So I think someone like myself, we have an obligation to help folks like Nicholas and others who are interested. And Rose, to her point about not having mentors in her community, I think I love going into communities and helping those who want to be entrepreneurs. Sometimes it's not the racism as much as it is not knowing what to do in terms of getting licensing and bonding and things like that. They just need someone to kind of guide them along the way. And so if they don't have that or don't know where to go, then that's not always racism. That's just a lack of knowledge. And so perhaps we need to, on the government side, need to do more to raise awareness about resources available to those that are trying, that are struggling. So I find that that's the case because I'm on the Minority Business Council in Virginia Beach. We're all volunteers appointed by City Council to advise council about opportunities to do business with the city. And so we have these expos. We have one coming up next month in November for anyone that's interested in doing business, not only with the city, but with government. We have those resources there. It's free. And so I think the next president can just help us just make sure that the laws are being abided. They don't create more laws to create a hindrance to success.
Rose, what can the next president do to make it better to be in terms of being an American, to lift your vision of being an American?
I think that there is never going to ever be another an Afro-American, just that culture anymore, because now they are blending. We're blending. We're black. We're white. And we just all really need to come together and pull together. Where one, if this culture can raise that culture, then they need to do it. It's not going to be just one culture.
So you're saying that we're going to continue to be multicultural, that we're going to continue to bring in more and more minorities into the country. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And so therefore we need to learn how to get along?
We just really need to learn how to get along, listen, and understand each other, because we all have different ways, but we all the same.
Okay. Eric.
This is a multifaceted question, but it really boils down to these few variables that I've thought about. The United States, that this experiment is the most tenuous form of government that we have in the world. The reason why it's the most tenuous form of government is because there are so many different factions involved in it. So when you look at the different demographics, the different incomes, the groups, the different cultures, the different businesses, we all have an interest in democracy and government working for us. So at this point, you know, in part, as Rose stated, yes, we all do need to come together. But what does that mean for our next president? I believe that this country, we're at a very pivotal point in our history. The reason why I say that is because for those Gen Xers, millennials that don't remember 1964, the Goldwater era, the civil rights movement during that time period, they don't remember what happened after that, the civil rights movement. We're in a time period where our country is looking for a leader. Not an opportunist. That's a person that takes advantages of other individuals' disadvantages in order to enrich themselves. They're not looking for a politician. That's an individual that's concerned about the next election and the special interest that's supporting them. What this country is in need of is a statesman. And that's a person that is concerned about the next generation. And a person who understands what I call the humility of service. And that's a person that's able to go to the least of them. And if we reach out to the least of them to help them with all that we have, then I think you'll start to see a better better flowing country that we have and individuals working together. As it relates to business, I'll be honest with you. Laws don't work for you know, the average Joe and Blow, you know, unless you could pay $50,000, $100,000 for a lobbyist firm, the laws are not working for you. Yeah. All right. They're working for those individuals. That's
right. Okay. Nicholas.
Well, I mean,
what can the next president do?
Well, for me, like when I look at the presidential election right now, we have one side that's saying make America great again, but we never hear like what year. We never hear a specific year. And, you know, I can't think of, you know, America's been good, but I feel like we can do so much more. I feel like the next president for me, money in politics is a big issue. And so I don't like the fact that a corporation can give somebody, say, $4 million, $5 million, and then we expect that our votes are the same. You're not going to value my vote as much as you're going to value somebody's who give you that much money. So I feel like that's, for me, obviously Hillary Clinton is, you know, that's what she represents right now. But I feel like we need to put pressure, if she wins or Donald Trump wins, we need to put pressure on whoever it is to get out of that system, because right now the big corporations kind of control the government right now. Mm-hmm. So I feel like my next president needs to be their main focus.
Okay. Daryl joins us from Newport News. Hi, Daryl. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I enjoy your program, and I listen to it every week. And my issue is there's more than one subject. Y'all cover two subjects today. The theme that I hear repeatedly is racism and bias. And I would be more a believer in that as a 53-year-old adult. I went to public schools and busing and everything. Here's my issue. We've got, and these are federal statistics, 70% or higher illegitimacy in the black community. 40% of the males don't graduate high school. And since 1980, we're talking about 40% of the four violent crimes are committed by African-American males. And that's not racism and that's not bias. I think we all hold ourselves back as individuals. And that's what I want to hear y'all talk about more.
Okay, then we're going
to
talk about
individual.
Then, Daryl, let me let the panel answer you then. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. Daryl, thank you for that for that observation. And ironically, that's an observation that a lot of individuals, especially in the white community, hold. And you're really looking at apples and oranges. The reason why you have those statistics that exist today, 35 years after the most progressive time period in African-Americans' communities, is because of public policies and laws that were created in order to cripple those communities. If you go all the way back to the Nixon administration, where those individuals started planning public policy in order to cripple those communities, you'll see the effects of it. Go back to the Reagan administration, which created the prison pipeline, which privatized prisons. If you go back to the crack laws, which have been overturned and admitted that they were biased and implicitly racist. If you look at all of these public policies that were created by white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males in Congress and perpetuated on the state level by the same, okay, you will see that it's an inherent racism that does exist that created that.
And the other, I do want to add one comment also, and that is that we are not ignoring the problems that happen within the community. I don't think anyone sitting at this table is saying that the African-American community does not have issues.
Sure.
But we're looking at a more global sense of where do we fit here in America. I want to play some sound from Baby Boomers that we haven't heard yet. This is Deborah Clark and Ike Owens.
To be an American is to enjoy the freedoms and liberties, because our country is so blessed. And to be able to fulfill our dreams, to see our children do so much better than we ourselves have done. Our young men and young ladies, they have so much potential, so much to offer. And I just want to see their dreams fulfilled. I'm glad to be in America, because other countries are having, you know, so much turmoil, and they're not able to worship. They're not able to do so many things. But to be in America, to be able to do so many things, we're blessed. And I'm so thankful to be here.
Would you change anything?
I would. I wish that we could just get along better. I wish that prejudice was just gone.
What it means for me to be a black man in America is strength, education. I was afforded an opportunity to get all kinds of education. Nobody stopped me from education because of what my forefathers and people fought for, so I could be educated. to be free, so I can show the young kids that we have to stay together and that we have to do what it takes to unite and stay as one.
So, question for you guys. As we identify ourselves as African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, et cetera, does that detract from the melting pot thought that this country is, you know, this big melting pot, or does that connect us to America?
I think it connects us. All the hyphenated does is just more or less help define us, what we relate to. I'm certainly in touch with my heritage and all those who sacrificed, that survived the Middle Passage, Jim Crow, slavery. We are descendants of some strong stock. So, and I'm very proud of that. And Asians and others, I don't think it divides us. It's just an identifier to say that this is the culture I relate to. We all say we are American. Notice everyone says American, mm-hmm. but there's just saying that, I have a special uniqueness that and a voice that needs to be at that table. So when you see commercials that offend sensibilities, you can tell that somebody was not at the table represented when certain things happen. For instance, with the Fox News, that piece mm-hmm. on the insensitivity there. So you can tell when certain people aren't in the room or not at the table. We still have a disproportionate, we're so all people of color are underrepresented on corporate boards, as an example. Some of the policies and things that happen at the corporate level, we're not at the table. So we still have work to do. I agree with previous callers. We have a lot of work to do. We cannot sit on our laurels. We certainly need to vote. There's no excuse for not voting. That's another thing about being in America, no one is stopping me from voting. So we have that responsibility. It's free access. And so let's take advantage. Let's mark the ballot and whichever party you support, but at least go to the polls.
Absolutely. Eric?
All right. I definitely agree that the hyphen, we're all hyphen Americans. There's only one true native for this country. Those are Native Americans. Now, the government itself that was created on the lands that were taken from the Native Americans is that created by white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males from England. So in itself, we're all hyphenated. But I go back to a couple of callers when I make this statement, their comments. We, by understanding where you come from, it simply adds more value to you, okay? Because you're appreciating your culture. The flip side of that coin is for you to not only appreciate and accept who you are, but for those others to educate others about it and for those others to accept who you are. The lie of integration and the lie of women coming into the workplace is that we thought that we had to be likewise, or women thought they had to be like men. No, be who you are and let there be an acceptance for who you are in order to reach the same goal of that particular company, of that country, of that environment. But as you stated previously, that there's a lack of representation around these tables. And that's true. But keep in mind, I want people to wrap their minds around this. As it relates to African Americans, if you put our existence in eights, for 5/8 of our existence, we had no power whatsoever. We were enslaved people. That's a belief process that was in the minds of slaves when Harriet Tubman tried to free, and it was also in the minds of those that were not black, those whites. Then you had 100 years, 2 other 8s of suppression of those rights. We're in the last eight. Right. Yeah. The 50 years where we're making these strides. So when you sit back and understand the significance of that time and all that we've endured, all that we've accomplished, doesn't it make you proud?
Yes.
Nicholas.
I think it's a respect thing. I think, you know, if you're white, you should be proud of your race. I'm black. I'm proud of my race. But it's also important for me to respect their race, and it's important for them to respect my race. Mm-hmm. And it's important to respect our issues that's going on. You know, when people say all lives matter, yeah, all lives do matter. But black lives right now are in a need of attention. You know, we need to have attention brought to that, you know, our issues. You know, we talk about police brutality. We talk about all the issues. People try to turn a blind eye to that. And it's like, to me personally, I just don't understand how you can. If you look at all the big nationwide, you know, stories, then you look at the little stuff. Like, I saw something yesterday where a black guy, like, he was complying with the police and they pushed his head against the windshield and broke the windshield. So it's like, when I see stuff like that, it's obvious to me that we still have so much to do.
Mm-hmm. Rose, I'm going to ask you, because we only got about 4 minutes left, so I can get one from each of you. But convince people in your circle of friends, in your sphere's influence, to vote. What do you say about voting?
Voting is a right that we have earned, and we should move forward to do that, because our forefathers and our ancestors fought for us to vote so that you can make a decision for your community.
Okay. That's Rose Arrington. She is a commissioner with Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority. Thank you so much, Rose, for joining us. We appreciate it. Delcino Miles with the Miles Agency. Tell me about voting.
It's your right, Ed. No one should intimidate you, embarrass you, or try to minimize your power. That's the one power you have that no one should be able to take away from you. Okay. And it's the only time that the government actually has given us that power to make a decision about our own government, unless you, of course, are running for office and you're an elected official. But please don't take it lightly. It's a responsibility that we all have. If you're 18 or older or 17 and a half by a certain age, you know that better than I do. but make sure that you take it seriously. Don't sit home and vote all the way down the ticket. Don't just stop at the presidential. Vote all the way down, because the folks that impact us the most are the ones that live right here in the same area code.
Absolutely. That's Delcino Miles with the Miles Agency. Thank you so much, Delcino. Eric, you got a minute.
Yes. Voting is the key that unlocks the door to meaningful change in this country through public policy. I've stated before, from my theory, public policy and laws are created to control resources, people, and beliefs. If you want to make meaningful change, take that key, unlock the door, use your vote. Keep in mind that no one gave us anything in this country. We earned everything. Don't let anyone lie to you. Voting, the education, and the right to buy meaningful property are the three things that we have to fight for consistently. Vote.
Okay. Nicholas, you get the last word.
All right.
Tell the millennials about voting.
Well, I mean, I look at Flint, Michigan. You see with all the decisions that are made down there, and you saw all the bad decisions made by the politicians that were obviously not looking out for the people. Those people were voted in office. So when I look at that, your vote is so important, because it's literally the person representing what you want to get done. So I say go out and vote. Some people might say it's not cool to vote or whatever. Don't believe them. Go vote. Support. And yeah.
Nicholas Thomas, who is a senior strategic communications major at Hampton University, and Eric LaVille, who is a professor also at Hampton University. Thank you so much, panel. And thank you, our audience, for calling in, giving us your feedback on what it means to be an American. And be sure to listen to WHRV all next week as the conversation on being an American continues during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And to hear this show again or share it with a friend, download the podcast at anotherviewradio.org. And while you're there, please sign up for our eView newsletter. It's a once-a-week reminder of upcoming shows. We're on Facebook, so like us. Man, I'm trying to get the social media thing together. And I'm on Twitter at Barbara Ham Lee. Next week, it's the Another View Roundtable. We've got so much to talk about as we move closer to Election Day, which is November the 8th. And speaking of voting, as all of our panelists said to you today, the deadline to register to vote in this upcoming election is October 17th. That's a week from Monday. So if you have not registered to vote, now is the time to please do that. Your vote counts, so please register today. Our theme music was composed and performed by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Victor Bowen is our audio engineer, and Monique Tosin answered our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Please stay safe, stay dry this weekend. We pray for those who are in the path of Matthew right now and hope that they make out okay. And let's get together again next Friday at noon for another View.